A very great vision is needed, and the man who has it must follow it as the eagle seeks the deepest blue of the sky.
This is Wisdom of the Elders, dedicated to preserving and sharing the history and culture, songs and stories of Native North American peoples. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Dene Nation. The words of Crazy Horse open today's program, in which we'll be exploring the healing of the earth according to Native prophecy. In Tribal Rhythms with Nico Nguyen, we'll meet Joanne Shenandoah and learn how her musical path is intertwined with Iroquois prophecy. We'll also be hearing from Judy Bluehorse Skelton, the late Judy Trejo, and the Turtle Island Storytellers. Next up, Barbara Roberts reveals Iroquois and Mi'kmaq prophecy told at the United Nations.
Our Mother Earth is crying from abuse and disrespect, and the mothers of the nations of this earth are also crying.
Stay with us. This is Wisdom of the Elders. You're listening to Part 2, Destiny Song and Mass Dance, from the Two World Concerto, performed by R. Carlos Nakai, the Black Lodge Singers, and the Canyon Symphony Orchestra, available on the Canyon Records label.
Thank you.
Today, there is much confusion in the world. Global warming, famine. People search for direction for their families, communities, and nations. People search for hope. As a Navajo child, I was taught each people have their own ways and ceremonies given to them to maintain and perform. I was taught to be respectful of each tribe's vision of the future. In recent times, certain tribal elders have chosen to reveal their visions because they felt their message had global import. In this program, we explore some of these prophecies. The United Nations declared the period from 1995 to 2004 as the International Decade of the World's Indigenous People. During this decade, the United Nations also created the Permanent Forum for Indigenous Issues, granting a voice to Native peoples who have been overlooked since the UN came into being in 1945. On November 22, 1993, just prior to the declaration of the Decade of Indigenous People, elders of seven North American tribal delegations shared their visions and prophecies regarding the condition of the earth and its peoples with their new brothers and sisters in diplomacy at the UN. The event was called Cry of the Earth.
The tribal elders entered the assembly in their traditional ceremonial attire. At last they were being recognized, at least symbolically, as representatives of sovereign nations. And they came prepared to deliver a weighty and important message. There were the Mi'kmaq and the Algonquin from Canada, the Lakota, Iroquois, and Hopi from the U.S., and the Maya and the Huichol from Mexico. To these leaders, the fate of the earth and the survival of the human species were at stake.
All Great Spirit, we give you thanks today for the gift of life you have given all of us. We come here to bring a message to our white brothers and sisters so they will hear the cry of Mother Earth, and they will hear the cry of the children. They will hear the cry of the animals. They will hear the cry of our indigenous people. Please help us and listen. Oh.
Please welcome the Iroquois delegation.
Elders representing the Haudenosaunee or Iroquois Confederacy approached to address the council. The first to speak was the late Leon Shenandoah, the keeper of the central fire of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy for over a quarter of a century. He speaks in his native Onondagan. Clan mother, Audrey Shenandoah, translates.
As we are all gathered here today in this place, it has become our responsibility to bring a message to the people about how we should care for our Mother, the Earth. Our Creator has given to us our Mother, the Earth. From our Mother, the Earth, comes everything that people need to sustain their life here on Earth.
Leon and Audrey Shenandoah see humankind as part of the Earth, much more than mere inhabitants living upon the Earth. In this tradition, humankind functions along with the Earth as part of a single organism. In mainstream society, we tend to separate ourselves from the elements of the earth. How many of us actually look at the thunder as a trusted and wise family member?
We have our grandfathers, the thundering voices, who carry the waters to the land that our food will grow. What we depend on for life, our sustenance, will grow and be plentiful again. And on moving about in the sky world, we have our brother, the sun, who brings heat and light to the earth so that we do not walk around and move about in darkness, and so that the plant life will grow and that life will flourish here on earth.
The Iroquois believe the earth was given to us as a sacred trust, but that trust has been violated.
Within our prophecies, we are told that all of these things, all of these gifts for which we give thanks to our Creator, are the ones who will tell us when a changing of the earth is coming about. For they will be, having been abused, they will be withdrawn from us, and we can no longer depend on them. Our brother, the sun, who gives us heat and light, will also become something that will begin to take life from the pollution
in our language of today. The sun will become affected, and human people here on this earth will suffer from the heat of the sun.
The crisis will go beyond the material aspects of the earth's bounty. Iroquois prophecies anticipate spiritual ills within humankind that will erode our ability to communicate with each other.
And the people, the leadership, the governments, I'll say, of this whole earth will no longer be able to sit together and talk in peace. And this will begin, we are told, in the land far across the big ocean, in the land of the white sand.
A small, lovely fruit, such as the strawberry, might seem trivial juxtaposed to the prospects of war, flooding, or global warming. But it's the little events, with their cumulative effects, that will add up to what historians will call devastation.
The strawberry, the principle of all the fruit life on this land, will become scarce, and then one time will come and we'll not be able to see the strawberry. Then we may use the red leaves, if there are only leaves, and give our thanksgiving still that the strawberry plant is there, although the berry has not appeared. Then this will be acceptable as a thanksgiving to our Creator.
For the Iroquois, the role of women is distinct and critical in averting destruction.
Our Mother Earth is crying from abuse and disrespect, and the mothers of the nations of this earth are also crying. I'm speaking about the mothers and the women who still are connected to the things of earth, to the life-giving Mother Earth, that these true ways that were given to our people will live on, that our children 7 generations into the future will have clean water, will have clean food to take into their bodies so that there will be life. We are in very, very difficult times, and it becomes an individual kind of thing for people to change their lifestyle. And in our nation, the women have a very noble, respectful place in our societies. And the women are in the forefront of keeping our traditions, of keeping our ways of life that were given to us in the beginning of our time. And this is the way we are told that it should be. Our leadership do not make decisions without input, without the advice, without consulting with the women within our nations. Because the mothers, the women, are life givers themselves.
The Iroquois believe there is a set of instructions for how to survive. The instructions are the basis for the traditions, Thanksgiving prayers, and ceremonies that make up the Iroquois way of life. More than 200 years ago, the instructions came to a holy man in a vision, a dream. Here is Onondagan Faith Keeper, Orin Lyons.
We have what we need to survive. They told us we have our traditional ways, our ceremonies, our thanksgiving, to carry them out. And that's how our people will survive. No other way. That's how life will survive. My uncle tells me and reminds me that what they said was that by keeping our traditional ways, our thanksgivings, and carrying this out, we are supporting life. That when we stop, when the indigenous nations stop giving thanks, then things will stop growing also. And the values of food will go down, the value of money will mean nothing, and all of the things that we're talking about will come about. And so it's up to the people.
The other side of this prophecy is the healing. But humankind will have to work together to embrace a collective reality of spiritual health. Here are the words of Mi'kmaq elder David Geo, as read by Lionel Little Eagle Pin.
The circle of the medicine wheel is now complete. The Wabanaki people, the people of the light, have joined the circle. We have joined the circle under the following philosophy. You heal the self. You help to heal the family. The family helps to heal the community. The community helps to heal the nation. And the nation helps heal the world. All the prophecies from other nations now coincide and complement each other. It is time for us to all stop blaming one another and move forward. For the survival of the world as we know it lies in our hands. We must seek out and absorb the wisdom of the elders and use it for the betterment of others.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Barbara Roberts.
Reservation Blues is an award-winning novel by Spokane Coeur d'Alene writer Sherman Alexie. It's also the name of a recording that blends Alexie's words with songwriter Jim Boyd's music. The two have collaborated and performed in numerous concerts and benefits, and on a variety of productions, including Alexie's motion picture, Smoke Signals. When the friends work together, Boyd does the vocals, guitar, bass, keyboards, and flute, and Alexie does the readings. Prophecy is the last song on their album.
This is not the river we were promised. We light sweet grass and wait for the salmon's return. Sister, I believe in salmon. Brother, I believe in smoke. Somewhere, an old Indian man sleeps in a doorway. If you see him, stop to give him a greeting and say his name aloud so that he also remembers it. And whisper a prayer for him. Somewhere, an old Indian woman sits in a doorway. If you see her, stop to give her a greeting and say her name aloud so that she also remembers it, and whisper a prayer for her. Somewhere, Indian children wait by the river. If you see them, stop and wait with them. Father, I believe in this river. Mother, I believe in this river. Children, I believe in this river. The distance between salmon is greater than the distance between people. We can swim for days and never see another face we recognize. We arrive at this river or that river, but never at the river we were promised. At every river, we are red as salmon. At every river, we are blue as smoke.
Jim Boyd and Sherman Alexie's song, Prophecy, is from the album Alternatives, available from Thunderwolf Productions. Coming up, Judy Bluehorse Skelton shares some thoughts on fall gathering, and in Tribal Rhythms we'll meet musician Joanne Shenandoah. Then we'll hear from the late Judy Trejo, and on Turtle Island Storytellers, Anita Andrezzi shares a Yaqui creation story.
The most mysterious thing was that it was a talking tree, a singing tree, a humming tree.
I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice and for generations no longer know who they are. To those who search and never find.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Fall is a time of slowing, a time for reflecting on the fullness of days past, according to Judy Bluehorse Skelton.
And in the fall, some seeds, the fruits, as they come into full bearing, is the time to gather them. When the energy starts to move back into the root, if you're gathering energy or medicine, if you're gathering plants for root medicine, you might be digging roots in late fall, or some do that in early spring. And then we move into fall, we move to the west, to the dusk or sunset time of day. This is the direction of maturity, the adult. It's a slowing down. It's a letting go. It's a time when we accept some things will die, whether it's an idea or a belief that we've held, whether it's a dream that we gave birth to in spring or in the spring of our life and has come to full fruition. And sometimes it's hard to let go of those. We get very attached. We don't want to see it give way. And yet if we don't give way, then we miss the gift of a new vision, giving birth to something new in the following winter and spring. If you look at a society like the American society, the mainstream society, you can guess which direction or which season, as a culture, mainstream society likes to stay in. It's summer, youth. It's let's stay active. Let's stay youthful. Let's stay young. Those are all good things. However, we miss the gift of maturity. We miss the gift of contemplation, reflection. We miss the gifts of moving into the role of being of service. We miss the gifts of letting go, of releasing, letting things move on. So we kind of get stuck as a society. You can see it in the youth culture as a country. There's a certain immaturity. We stay caught up in emotional passions. We don't mature into the wise elder. And to mature and grow and become the wise elder means we have to move through the west to come to the north and dream again and begin all over again with fresh vision, fresh inspiration, new knowledge, and things to share when spring comes again. When the leaves fall from the trees, things begin to go underground, slow down, begin to let go. I think fall is the hardest season for the modern culture, the modern society, to move into gracefully, because it means letting go of the dreams that were not fulfilled during that summer. Letting go of things in our life that may not be working for us any longer. It's the time to look within, to reflect, and to contemplate where we are, and to contemplate our lives, our actions, our inactions. It's the time when things begin to die. There's a harvest time. The harvest, it's when we reap the things we've sown. And when we look and evaluate the things that we have sown and what we're reaping, it can be hard. It can also be beautiful, but oftentimes it changes us. And so the fall, with all the beauty of the falling leaves and the turning of the colors, I think the plant world reminds us that it's our opportunity to let go. And know that as some part of us dies, that a new part will be born in the spring. If we're not willing to let some part of us die, old patterns or old behavior, then we can never fully grow into the potential that we were born with. And so fall, dusk, sunset, turning to the west is an important part of coming into our full maturity. The Cherokee tradition, we don't become an adult, we don't become full maturity until 51. I think part of that is based on the lifespan used to be 120. Yes, 120. I had an opportunity to hear Deepak Chopra speak 6 or 7 years ago. And he is East Indian, a doctor living now here in the United States. And he was speaking how his culture said, in your 51st or 52nd year, you become fully mature. And I had never heard that except from the Cherokee. And he went on to say that the lifespan of the ancestors was 130 years, and that one lived one's life and did the prayers, followed the ceremonies, ate the proper foods, and a life expectancy of 130 was not unusual. Fall is the time of coming into service. It's when, as adults, we've raised our families, and now we look within and decide how we can serve the larger community, how we're going to share our gifts for the second half of our life. So it can be a very exciting time. It can be a very powerful time, because other energies start to come up and move. And because we have more experience and knowledge at that age, we're able to use that powerful energy in a very good way, conscious way. We can choose how we're going to share all that we have to give in the best way we can. With each breath, with each step, in each moment, may we all create beauty. O Sadadu.
Judy Bluehorse Skelton teaches herbal medicine at conferences and workshops in Portland, Oregon. According to Joanne Shenandoah, prophecy and respect for life can guide one's music. The prophecy song, an Anishinaabe song from her album Olunda with Lawrence Laughing, is to remind us to be aware of our place upon the earth. Here's Nicole Wind with Tribal Rhythms.
Joanne Shenandoah's Iroquois name, Degalewakwa, fulfills its prophecy, for her name means she sings. A Wolf Clan member of the Iroquois Confederacy Oneida Nation, Joanne is an internationally celebrated native singer and composer. She's won multiple awards as a vocalist and performer of original compositions that integrate the ancient songs of the Iroquois with a blend of traditional and contemporary instrumentation. You Will Have Peace is from Shenandoah's 2001 Native American Music Award winner, Peacemaker's Journey. It traces the story of the peacemaker, a prophet who convinced the Iroquois to abandon warfare among themselves, unite, and accept the great law of peace. Thus, The world's first United Nations, the Haudenosaunee, or the Iroquois Confederacy of Nations, was formed more than 1,000 years ago.
You know, I think that first and foremost in my mind, my music is not for recognition, but for listening and also for changing the heart and mind of people around the world. You know, it's been prophesied as well by some of our elders, our visionaries, that my music will be heard, and it's not specifically, in my sense, my music. It's music that is to be shared and music that will help to heal.
For her outstanding work as a singer, songwriter, and peacemaker, Shenandoah received the first honorary doctorate of music ever awarded to a Native musician from Syracuse University. She has sung at several inaugurations and appeared at the White House. Native Artist of the Year, Shenandoah has 12 albums to her credit, including Peacemaker's Journey, a 2001 Grammy nomination.
No matter where you go, there is someone wanting or needing to have some light in their life. And music definitely does that. We believe that music is a healing force and one that can completely change your life.
Shenandoah's musical career is a complex path moving in multiple directions, composing, singing, performing, and writing. Her father was late Clifford Shenandoah, a chief of the Onondaga Nation and a jazz guitarist who played with Duke Ellington. Maisie, Shenandoah's mother, is a clan mother of the Wolf Clan of the Oneidas. She and her husband provided numerous opportunities for the musically precocious child to acquire skills. Most evident in Shenandoah's work is its central goal of preserving and teaching about the value of the traditional music, legends, and wisdom of the Iroquois people.
There is a song that I wrote called Eagle Cries. It's about the great symbol of peace, the great white pine tree. On top stands an eagle who is our protector. When the eagle calls out or cries out, we're to join hands together as one, no matter what race, no matter what religion or age, because we can all find shelter under this great tree. So under this tree are buried our weapons of war. There are four white roots which are to spread into four directions of the earth, and it is said that one day everyone will hear about this great message of peace, and all are welcome to join us, holding hands under this tree so the tree will never fall.
Plant that seedling in the ground. Watch it grow. Hear its sound. Four white roots will grow and grow. People on soon we'll know when the eagle calls,
when the eagle calls,
when the eagle cries.
Well, ever since I was a little girl, I was singing. I realized only later in life, after 14 years in the computer industry, that I should be doing music. In the Iroquois way, we believe that we're given certain gifts and responsibilities, and that if we use these responsibilities in a good way with a good mind, we will be able to affect the world. And I guess I've been able to do that. I've really followed my heart. I moved back to Oneida territory and began recording and performing and singing full time.
There are a number of central themes that weave through Shenandoah's music. Many of her songs focus on honoring women and praising Mother Earth. Her recording Lifeblood with Peter Cater includes a woman's dance and this song Path of Beauty that affirms the true beauty of a woman as she grows older and becomes an elder.
It's a central theme in the philosophy of the Haudenosaunee altogether, because women are the clan mothers responsible for the political, social, and spiritual welfare of the people. It's a very big job, and that's one that my mother's had.
Her love of children and a healthy sense of fun shine in Shenandoah's All Spirit Sing album, a work that begs to be transformed into an animated film. It describes the epic journey of an Iroquois child searching for her own voice and song.
Hi-ya, hi-ya, hi-yo, hi-ya, hi-yo, hi-yo, hi-yo. Hi-yo, hi-yo, hi-ya, way-ya, hi-ya, way-ya, hi-ya, way.
A long time ago, I was afraid of the dark.
I realize that a lot of children, as they're growing up, they aren't sure where their place is or where they belong or what their responsibility or gifts or talents are. Now, we believe that as custodians of the earth and custodians of our community, we are supposed to help children recognize their talent so that they can take active part in their community as they grow older.
Shenandoah is a natural teacher. She enjoys sharing ideas for achieving goals and realizing potential.
It's a very simple and beautiful way of realizing your gift, and that is allowing it to happen. Like many people will say, I've never played guitar, I've never played the piano, I wish I could do that, yet they've never sat down and tried.
While Shenandoah's music is firmly planted in her own culture, many songs enlighten listeners about Native and mainstream issues. Her album, Once in a Red Moon, includes songs about environmental concerns, a plea to cease the desecration of Indian graves, and the problem of suicide among Natives. Joanne Shenandoah feels that Native music holds the potential to help bring healing and peace to our country, indeed, to our world.
Neji Yagungwe Joje Lado Yago.
Well, I think if the general public actually took the initiative to say, this is the kind of music we want to hear. What I'm thinking is, hopefully, with the way that the world is looking at potential war, that we would consider reaching out for that spiritual music, that sacred music, that puts us in a good state of mind. Because a good mind in the Iroquois way doesn't necessarily mean that we have to agree on everything, but what it means is that we're willing to come to the same table, sit down and try to understand one another. And one of the best ways to communicate is through music. Music has changed the hearts and minds of a lot of people.
Show your face to the wind. Put your hand in the water.
Joanne Shenandoah lives with her daughter Leah and her husband Doug Gunandio. Joanne and Doug have been celebrating the completion of their orchestral production of Sky Woman, the book of legends that the two wrote. A review of that production is on Joanne's website at joanneshenandoah.com. Tribal Rhythms is produced by our music director, Nico Wind, and written by Ann Morin. If you'd like to learn more about any of the artists or music featured in our programs, visit us on the web at wisdomoftheelders.org. Coming up, the late Judy Trejo shares prophecy revealed by Paiute holy man, Wovoka.
He said, I visited the upper world, and I saw Jesus. And he sent me back, and this is what he said, that we must do this dance. It's called the Ghost Dance.
Stay with us. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Dene Nation, and this is Wisdom of the Elders.
The values our elders extol represent a legacy of knowledge that is becoming as endangered as many disappearing species in our fragile ecosystem. Wisdom of the Elders has been produced with funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail, National Park Service, and Spirit Mountain Community Fund, Grand Ronde, Oregon.
My grandfather has a story to tell. A storm of day, come and listen well. Hey, 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 hey. Listen with your heart.
In the late 1800s, a Paiute woodcutter taught his people how to be ready for the uncertain days ahead by bringing to them a dance, the ghost dance. Here's the late Judy Trejo.
Originally, they had called him Wuvuka. He was called the Second Christ. He was called the Ghost Dance Messiah. He was called Jesus by many Indians. But he never claimed to be any of these things. A day came when he fell ill. He was very ill, became delirious, reached a comatose state. This was during an eclipse of the sun. He was unconscious and among our native people. Way, way back when somebody was unconscious in a coma, they were always looked upon as visiting the other world. Some people survived, some people didn't. Jack Wilson was a survivor. He came back and he had a message for people. He said, "I visited the upper world and I saw Jesus. And he sent me back," and this is what he said, "that we must do this dance. It's called the Ghost Dance. We must all dance this. We must not fight amongst each other. We must not make war with the white man. We must always do right. We must not lie. We must live in a good way. And happiness is waiting for us. A better life is waiting for us." And this was pretty much what he preached. And he said, "We must take care of what we have. There will come a day when we will lose almost everything before we can get it back." And people did not understand what he meant. He said, "All race differences will be no more." He was misinterpreted. This was a time when the Plains tribes were having a very, very hard time with the military. And somebody said, "This Paiute man said that the whites are going to be wiped off the face of the earth." Music to many ears. They began to send delegates to Nevada to hear what this man had to say. At one time, Chief Sitting Bull from the Lakota people made a journey to Nevada, and him and Wovoka walked on the shores of Walker Lake and visited. Wovoka, he accepted a gift from Chief Sitting Bull, which was a pipe. It was a Sundance pipe, and it was a gift to the Paiute people. Sitting Bull gave him the Lakota Sundance way for the Paiute people in exchange for his prophecies. He would teach people how to do this dance, and it was not very different from the circle dance that our people had always done. The songs were more about nature. They were called ghost dance songs. And he'd say, "Dance, dance for this many days, dance for that many days. Be ready." Our people called it Tutno Nuga. Tutno means you're prepared, you're ready. They would wear their finest clothing, pack their most prized possessions, and go to these dances and dance till they would reach such a feverish pitch in their dancings. Many of them had visions. And this man, all he preached was peace. The military became alarmed at the multitude of people that were coming into Nevada just to come and hear this man speak. And it was something that they did not understand. All they heard was ghost dance. Something they did not understand naturally caused fear. And they knew they were doomed. All the Indians are getting together and they're going to wipe all of us off of the face of the earth, which was one of their many fears. Not too many people stuck around to hear what he really had to say. His teachings were not about war. They were about peace, getting along, stretching the golden rule to an extreme. Had a lot of Christian flavor in his teachings. And I was once asked by somebody, "So, what do you think about Wovoka's prophecies?" I said, "Well, I think we're living right in the middle of Wovoka's prophecies right now." Another thing I was asked, "But what about when he said all the white people will be wiped off the face of the earth?" I said, he said all racial differences would be obliterated. I says, but if you want to look at it that other way and believe that he said all the white people would be wiped off the face of the earth, I said, if they continue marrying our children, our grandchildren, our nieces, our nephews, there's something there. You know, the non-natives are marrying into the very strong Indian lines. If this continues, I don't know how long it'll be. Everybody will be mixed with Indian blood. There will be no more. A lot of people don't agree with me on that either, and these are just purely Tehuvivu Judy's thoughts.
The late Judy Trejo was a Paiute song carrier, an educator, an award-winning recording artist. She is deeply missed.
Long ago, there was a beautiful spirit woman. Her name was Yomumali. She was beautiful because she was full of spirit. She was a creator. She created the mountains. She created the land. She created all the animals that were on the land.
Anita Andrezi is a Yaqui artist and storyteller. Today she tells of Yomumali from the Yaqui creation story.
She also created the people. She made these little people and put them into a village by the ocean, close to hunting, close to fishing, and she thought the people would be happy there. But she also made something that was a bit of a mystery. It was a very, very tall tree. The tree was so high that you had to look up, up and crane your neck, and you couldn't even see the top of it. But that wasn't the most unusual thing about it. The most mysterious thing was that it was a talking tree, a singing tree, a humming tree. And the people would listen and listen all day and all night trying to figure out what the tree was telling them. Because Yomumali wasn't there any longer. She had left. She had to create in other parts of the world. The people wondered. They sent the youngest person, the little baby, but the baby couldn't tell them what the tree was saying. They sent the oldest woman, the oldest man, but they couldn't figure out what the tree was telling the people either. They sent the hunter, they sent the singer, they sent the shaman, the medicine man and woman. They sent every person that they could think of in the whole village, but no one could figure out what that tree was telling them. They accused each other of not being good enough to be able to receive the holy message. They began to have a lot of arguments. There was dissension in the village, and they began to get angry at their creator, at Yomumali. They couldn't figure out why she had given this to them when they didn't have any idea what it was supposed to mean.
She heard them talking and arguing and yelling at each other, and she came back from her creating in the mountains. And she said, "My children, what is happening?" They told her. She said, "You shouldn't be arguing. This is a wonderful mystery. It's meant for you to make you think and wonder, because people must always wonder at the great mysteries of life. But let me help you. All of you, please sit around me in a circle." And then she called all the animals while the people were sitting. The animals filed in and they made the outer circle. And she said, "I would like to tell everyone here, both the people, the humans, and also all the other creatures in creation, I would like to tell you what the talking tree is telling you. But," she said, "I have to warn you that there will be some things that are terrible. You won't want to believe them, but I'm telling you the truth. I am telling you what the tree is saying." Well, everybody was listening. They all assured her that they would believe her and trust in her. First, she started telling what the animals should know. Of course, all the animals listened very carefully and gratefully. They already knew some of that because it was part of their nature. She told them that the deer would be eaten by the cougar, and that the deer would also be eaten by people, but the deers would eat the plants. Everything was told. The rabbits would be eaten by the coyotes. The coyotes might be hunted and killed by the cougar. Everything seemed part of nature. And as soon as she had told this to all the animals, they ran away or walked or flew or crawled and went back to their own places. Finally, it was just the people. "Well, my children, things will be hard for you. Of course, you know that you shouldn't harm each other, either by words or by thoughts or actions. But it is something that you're going to have to learn a little deeper, because I haven't been happy with the way you've treated each other. Many, many generations from now," she said, "there will come some strange people to your land. They will take away your children. They will teach you a new language. They will give you new ways of thinking and believing. It will be all different. There will be terrible sicknesses. There will be a huge iron snake with fire and smoke that comes out of the top of its head, and it will go across the country roaring. It will be a sad time for you. You will lose much." After this announcement, the people were shocked. They were frightened. And because they were frightened, they became angry. "Oh, she's not really telling us the truth," some of them said. "She's just trying to frighten us so that she can control us." Yomumili heard this, and she told the people that she was leaving. She said, "My children, I am the creator. I am your mother. But I don't control you. And I'm going to leave you. I'm going to continue creating. You must make your own decisions. And whatever decision that you make, think about your children and how they would fare under those decisions." So she took her favorite river and she rolled it up, put it under her arm, and walked away on a rainbow. Back in the village, the people looked at each other, panicking. Yomumili had left them. They had decisions to make. How far away was this future? Some of the people were so frightened, they began to make preparations to leave. "We're leaving. We're not staying here. We're going to the ocean," some of them said. And as they walked into the waves, they began to change the way they looked, and they became all the mammals of the ocean. They became all the dolphins and the porpoises. And they say to this very day that if you're lost at sea, they will help you back to shore, because they remember the time when we were all one people. Some of the other people went into the desert, trying to flee their destiny. And as they walked into the desert, they became tiny, tiny, tiny little people who lived under the earth, the ant people. And they say, too, that if you're lost in the desert or in the mountains, they will help you back to the village because they remember the time when we were all one people. There were still quite a few people that stayed in the village. They decided they would face the future with courage and knowledge, and that's what they would teach their children. And those people are my ancestors, the Yaqui.
Anita Andrezi is married, has two children, and has lived in Everett, Washington for the past 37 years. As we end our program today, I'm compelled to note that not all tribes have apocalyptic prophecies, and we are cautioned against taking a message from other tribes and using it as our own. Nonetheless, each of us is responsible in our own way to the circle of beauty and harmony. So here's the question. What signs and warnings have been coming to you and your community? What are you being called to maintain, restore, defend, or create? We encourage you to remain receptive to messages coming to you and take action where you can. We will continue through our prayers, songs, stories, and endeavors to maintain our responsibilities for that which has been given to us by the Holy People. May you do the same. I'm Arlie Neskai. Hagonet, till we meet again.
Wisdom of the Elders is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail National Park Service, and Spirit Mountain Community Fund, Grand Ronde, Oregon. Learn more about the people and music you hear on our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Discover the growing network of Indigenous oral historians, storytellers, and song carriers. Visit the Turtle Island Storytellers Network at turtleislandstorytellers.net. Executive producer of Wisdom of the Elders is Rose Hybear. Co-producers Clark Salisbury and William Ward. Script editor and director Larry Johnson. Writer Anne Morin. Our theme music is by music director Nico Wynn. Field producer Mark Lavonier at WRVO Public Radio, New York. Website assistance from Clark Salisbury, Kara Briggs, and Rebecca Freeman. Production assistance by Paul Woodsong, Lionel Little Eagle Pin, Paula Manley, and Barbara McKay. Distribution manager Richard Fonseca. Special thanks to Native American Public Telecommunications and American Indian Radio on satellite.